Hey guys, Rose420 here. We're going to get into the third part of Jeffrey Dahmer's episode, which includes his capture, arrest, trial, and jailing and subsequent death. Now, I know some of you heard the mini episode I published yesterday. I decided to erase it because I'm just going to do the episode tonight. I have more free time than I expected. So if you did get a chance to listen to it, you might hear some repeated information. I'm sorry about that, because I'm gonna get into his capture again. So anyways, I'm sorry it took me so long to get this third episode out. I'm taking classes, working, and doing a lot, planning a wedding right now. So life is a little crazy, so cut me some slack. So go get your weed, go get your wine, and let's dive into this. Okay, guys, welcome back. I'm Rose420. Thank you for joining me again. Like I said, I'm sorry this episode took so long. I have a lot of crazy shit going on in life right now, so it might be days in between episodes or not. It depends how much free time I have. I love doing this, but it is not a source of income for me. Nor is it related to school, so some things have to take precedent over it because this is pretty much just for fun for me, if you couldn't tell. So today, I am actually smoking my dab pen during this. So I have a dab pen with gelato in it. I got it from a dispensary. I would not recommend buying dab pens off the street. They're not always what people say they are. Like, you could buy packaging online. Anyway, I really enjoy it. And tonight when I am smoking bongs, I will be smoking mac cake with a concentrate crumble on top. So the cartridge gets 3.5 leaves out of 5 for me, and the mac cake gets 3.5 out of 5 leaves for me. The crumble, on the other hand, gets 5 out of 5 leaves for me. That stuff gets me so stoned. So grab your dab pens, your bongs, your bowls, your rolling papers, whatever you want to use. Get your wine, because I'm sipping on some Pinot Gris. And let's dive into the capture, arrest, trial, and imprisonment of Jeffrey Dahmer. July 22nd, 1991. Jeffrey upped his game a little. So we know he loved to offer boys $50 to take him home or to go home with him. And so he went up to 3 men and offered them $100 to go back to his apartment to take pictures and keep him company and drink with him and blah, blah. He's so lonely, blah, blah. I thought his skeletons were keeping him company. Anyway, only one of the men agrees to go. And that man is Tracy Edwards. He's 32 years old, and he goes back to Jeffrey's apartment, which we know is a murder den, a torture den. We know bad, terrible things happen there, including cannibalism. Unfortunately, it's not limited to that, but that is one of the most shocking taboos usually. So Tracy gets into the apartment and notices it stinks. Well, duh, because let's not forget, Jeffrey liked to preserve dead people and keep them. He also noticed several boxes of hydrochloric acid, and Jeffrey said it was for cleaning bricks, which really doesn't make sense, but whatever. So they talked a little bit, and then Tracy was asking about Jeffrey's tropical fish, and Jeffrey tried to put handcuffs on him, When Tracy said, "What's happening?" Jeffrey was unsuccessful on cuffing his wrists. He then took Tracy to the bedroom to pose for nude pictures. While inside the bedroom, Tracy notices that there are nude male models on the walls and The Exorcist 3 is playing. I didn't even know that existed. I've watched a lot of The Exorcist movies, never saw that one. He also took note that there was a blue 57 gallon drum in the corner, and, you know, odors of decay and grossness were coming from it. If you don't know what decay smells like, and mixed with hydrochloric acid, I guarantee you wouldn't be able to put your finger on what it was. So Jeffrey then busts out a knife and he tells Tracy that he wants to take naked pics of him, which we already knew. We already asked for the nakies, the nudes, and this is clearly before Snapchat and Dat Punani, if it's cool, was a thing. So Tracy unbuttons his shirt and he agreed to it, but asked Jeffrey to take off the handcuffs and put away the knife. Jeffrey began acting odd. He began rocking back and forth and chanting, and then he would turn his attention back to Tracy. He cuddled with Tracy and put his head on his chest and listened to his heartbeat, and then looked at Tracy and said, "I intend to eat your heart," which, not in like a metaphorical way. As we know with Jeffrey, it was in a very literal sense. He wanted to eat his heart. So Tracy is trying to stop Jeffrey from attacking him. Tracy said that he wasn't going to run away and he wanted to be friends with Jeffrey, which we all know deep down, Jeffrey just wanted somebody who would never leave him. I'm not excusing anything he did because he's a sick mofo, but I mean, deep down, he just wanted somebody that would stay with him and be his slave. So Tracy makes a decision. He decides he's going to try and escape the next chance he gets. He says he needs to use the bathroom and then asked if they could sit in the living room with some beer because there was air conditioning. Jeffrey said okay, and they went out to the living room. And so Tracy waited and watched Jeffrey and waited until he wasn't paying attention for like 1 second and requested to use the bathroom again. So when he went to go to the bathroom again, he noticed Jeffrey didn't have the handcuffs on him. So Tracy punched him in the face. Jeffrey lost his balance and Tracy ran out the door. So at 11:30 p.m. on July 22nd, Tracy got two Milwaukee police officers he saw on the corner of North 25th Street and flagged them down. So they saw the handcuffs obviously attached to Tracy's wrists. And so Tracy explained to the officers that Jeffrey had put them on him and he wanted the police to remove them. So the police key didn't fit whatever brand of handcuffs Jeffrey had. I doubt he bought legit handcuffs from somewhere. Anyways, Tracy agreed to take the officers to the apartment, and he explained he had spent the last 5 hours trying to escape. So the officers and Tracy go to apartment 213, the torturous 213. Jeffrey invites them all inside and acknowledges he likes kinky sex. He did put handcuffs on Tracy, but, you know, so Tracy tells him he also had a large knife that he was threatening him with. And this all happened in the bedroom, and Jeffrey stopped talking. There is a key to the handcuffs, so they grab that and, you know, let Tracy finally free. And one of the detectives entered the bedroom saying he needed the key. And Yeah, so in the bedroom, the detective noted there was a large knife beneath the bed, just like Tracy had said. He also saw a drawer that was open, and he looked into it, and it contained tons of Polaroid pictures, and they were human bodies in various stages of dismemberment and decay. They also clearly took note of the odor Tracy had said he smelled when he walked in because it was very pungent. And so he takes the photos. The detective walks to his partner and says, "These are real." Jeffrey sees that the detective is holding a bunch of his Polaroids. And he tried to resist arrest because he knew the jig was up pretty much at that point. The officers obviously easily overpowered him and then cuffed him and called for a backup car. So one of the detectives at this point had opened the refrigerator to reveal a freshly severed head of a black male on the bottom shelf. So Jeffrey was laying on the floor while all this was happening and looking at it happening, and he said to the officers, "For what I did, I should be dead." Well, duh, Jeffrey, like, what you did was absolutely terrible. Imagine being his parents and finding out the freak you raised. Like, what the fuck? A more detailed search of the apartment revealed a lot more. There was 4 severed heads in the kitchen, 7 skulls, some painted and decorated and bleached, were found inside Jeffrey's bedroom and inside a closet. Investigators also discovered blood drippings on the tray of the refrigerator and 2 human hearts. Obviously, if those things are in there, you're going to find blood drippings, but whatever. And a portion of arm muscle. Blech. Ugh. Gives me the heebie-jeebers. Each wrapped inside plastic bags on the shelves. In Dahmer's freezer, there was an entire human torso and a bag of human organs. And there was human flesh stuck to the ice in his freezer. That is so freaking disgusting. I can't handle it. In apartment 213, torturous 213, as I like to call it, the investigators also discovered 2 entire skeletons, hands, severed penises, mummified scalps, and remember the 57-gallon, I keep saying that weird, 57-gallon drum that Tracy saw and the detective saw? Well, there were 3 more human torsos in there. In an acidic solution, just decaying. And yeah, I bet that was disgusting to see, and I cannot even begin to imagine the stench associated with all that. In reference to the recovery of body parts and artifacts at 924 North 25th Street, the chief medical examiner was quoted as saying, "It was more like dismantling someone's museum than an actual crime scene," which we know is true because Jeffrey wanted to preserve them, right? He wanted sex slaves. He wanted somebody to be with him forever. So he's trying to preserve these people. So let's get into his confession. So all that happened on July 22nd. So the next day in the early hours, Jeffrey starts to get questioned by Patrick Kennedy. And he asks about the murders, obviously, and all the evidence found at the apartment and why. Over the next 2 weeks, Kennedy and Dennis Murphy, who is also a detective, would conduct numerous interviews with Dahmer, all of which totaled over 60 hours. Jeffrey waived his right to having a lawyer present, which doesn't shock me. A lot of serial killers do, interestingly. I don't know if it's because they think they're more intelligent and they can get away with it, or if he just knew, like, no matter what happened with a lawyer, he was in shit, so he might as well admit it, or if he was proud of it. There's probably many different things that go into it. So he wanted to confess it. He said he had created a horror, and it only makes sense I do everything to put an end to it. So, in his confession, he admits to murdering 16 men in Wisconsin since 87. This is in 91, remember. And one victim in Ohio in 78. Jeffrey's victims had been rendered unconscious, all of them prior to the murder. Some died as a result of the way he tried to make them unconscious. Those are the people, if you remember, he injected acid or boiling water into their brains to make them into, like, sex zombies so they wouldn't, like, have any thoughts, but they'd still be alive. He had no memory of the murder of Toomey, and he was unsure whether he was unconscious when he beat him to death. So he couldn't remember it because he says he was in a drunken stupor. Almost all of Jeffrey's murders were committed after moving into 213, torturous 213. And he would ritually just pose all of his victims, as we know. And he admitted to all this, and he admitted to trying to save them. Jeffrey also was proud of his necrophilia and readily admitted to that. He did it with several of the victims. And, yeah, that's gross. So, he would dismember them in his bathtub and, blah, sorry, this gets into a lot of detail. And with one of his victims, the blood pooled inside his chest after death. So, Jeffrey removed all his internal organs, then put his torso on suspension so the blood would drain before dicing any of the organs, and he didn't want any flesh from the body, so he stripped it. The bones he wished to dispose of were pulverized, as we know. You know he pulverized a lot of skeletons, especially when he was really getting his MO down, or put in acid. Jeffrey also confessed having consumed hearts, livers, biceps, portions of thighs of several victims that he had killed within the previous year. He also began describing the increase in the rate of killings 2 months prior to his arrest. Jeffrey said he had been completely swept along, that's a direct quote, and he couldn't stop the compulsion to kill. And a direct quote from him is, "It was an incessant and never-ending desire to be with someone at whatever cost. Someone good-looking, really nice-looking. It just filled my thoughts all day long." So, like I said, Jeffrey just wanted somebody who would be with him forever. But he was sick, and I'm not excusing anything he did, but he was a lonely guy, and you could tell that throughout his whole story. When he asked why he preserved 7 skulls and 2 entire skeletons, Jeffrey said that he had been in the process of constructing an altar to the victim's skulls, and he intended to display them on a table in his living room. Because that would be totally normal if you went over and saw something like that. So, oh my God, how would you even get people into the apartment at that point? Because they would see human skulls in your living room. Like, that just shows how crazy he is. The display of skulls, he wanted them to adorn each side of the complete skeletons that he had. Then with the 4 severed heads in the kitchen, he wanted to remove all the flesh and have it used in his altar to his victims. Yuck. Yuck, it's just so gross to read about. He thought about incense because he knew it would smell. So incense sticks were to be placed at the end of the black table, which Jeffrey intended to place a large blue lamp and extending blue globe lights over. So this was going to be like a fucking display. It wasn't going to be like, oh, here's some dead people's skulls on a shelf. No, it was going to be that he was going to make it crazy. So he clearly never got to this because he got arrested, but he intended to put a black leather chair in there he would sit in. So he was interviewed November 18th in 91, and they asked him about the altar, and he said it was dedicated to myself. It was a place I could feel at home. A place for meditation, and he believed he drew power from it. If his arrest had happened 6 months later, that's what they would have found, he says, which is crazy. Just what they found was crazy, but imagine finding that. So, July 25th, 91. Obviously, this moved quickly because Jeffrey confessed. Dahmer got charged with 4 counts of first-degree murder. August 22nd, same year, he had been charged now with 11 murder counts. So from July to August, his murder counts went up substantially. On September 14th, investigators in Ohio had uncovered bone fragments in the woods. So they found molars and identified them to be Jeffrey Dahmer's first victim. So now he's charged with murder in Ohio as well. He did not get charged for Tracy's attempted murder and kidnapping. And since he didn't remember Toomey too much, they didn't charge him with that. They only wanted to bring charges that could be proven beyond a reasonable doubt because they didn't want anything to let him go because he was, like, you know, evil incarnated. That, you know, like, he was doing terrible things in this community. So since he didn't remember it, that didn't get put on one of his counts. So he pled guilty but insane to 15 counts of murder in the end. His trial begins on January 30th, 1992, and he's tried in Milwaukee for all 15 counts of first-degree murder. His judge was Lawrence Graham. He pled guilty on January 13th to the charges against him. Jeffrey waived his rights to initial trial to establish guilt. And so the issue was really debated by the opposing counsel at Jeffrey's trial to determine whether he was mentally ill or had a personality disorder or what was going on. Remember, he claimed guilty, but insane. The prosecution claimed that any disorders did not deprive Jeffrey of the ability to appreciate the criminality or his conduct. So, like, basically, no matter what mental disease, he knew right from wrong, and he knew these impulses were wrong and couldn't stop them. So defense experts argue Jeffrey was insane due to his necrophilic drive, which is pretty insane, we all have to admit. Wanting to have sex with dead people is crazy. And he did have a need for sexual encounters with the corpses after he killed these people. So they testified Jeffrey was unable to conform his conduct and that he was committing these crimes because he suffered from necrophilia, obviously, and a deep obsession with it. So an expert witness for the defense, Becker, diagnosed Jeffrey with necrophilia officially. So the final defense expert to testify was Carl Wallstrom, And he also diagnosed Jeffrey with necrophilia, but a bunch of other things. He diagnosed him with borderline personality disorder, schizotypal personality disorder, alcohol dependence, and a psychotic disorder. I think he's all of those things. I think he was seriously mentally ill. I do not think that he was mentally ill where he didn't understand his crimes. So no, he should not have gotten away with an insane plea. But he was, like, clearly insane. His actions were not okay in any measure. So the prosecution rejects that Jeffrey is insane, and they call their own psychiatrist to testify, Philip Resnick, and he says that Jeffrey doesn't have primary necrophilia because he also liked live sexual partners, and his true effort was to create an unresistant, submissive sexual partner who couldn't think for themselves, like I said before, and like would have no needs to cater to, that he could just use them as a sex slave. Another expert, Dr. Fred Fosdell, testified to his belief that Jeffrey was without any mental diseases at the times he committed the murder. He said Jeffrey was calculating and cunning, but he knew right from wrong, which I agree with, and he could control his actions, which I agree with. So the final witness to appear for the prosecution was psychiatrist Park Dietz, and he began his testimony on February 12th. Dietz testified that Jeffrey wasn't suffering from any mental diseases, and his direct quote was, "Dahmer went to great lengths to be alone with the victim and to have no witnesses." You know, so that means he knew what he was doing was wrong because he was trying to hide it from people. He explained that there's so much evidence for how Jeffrey prepared that his crimes couldn't be of a compulsive nature. So Dietz did say he had paraphilia, and that was not a matter of personal choice, but he said Jeffrey becoming intoxicated before committing the murders was really significant. His exact quote is, "If he had an impulse to kill or compulsion to kill, he wouldn't have to drink alcohol to overcome it. He only has to drink alcohol to overcome it because he is inhibited against killing." Dietz also pointed out movies that Jeffrey strongly identified with. So The Exorcist 3, remember Tracy saw that playing in the bedroom and became freaked out, and Return of the Jedi, which is interesting. I think that's interesting. And he liked the power held by the characters. So Dietz says it had a severe effect on Jeffrey's psyche, and that viewing these films over and over made it okay for him to search for victims. So Dietz diagnoses Jeffrey with substance use disorder, paraphilia, and schizotypal personality disorder. So the fight is whether he's sane. He eventually is concluded to be a sexual sadist with anti-personality disorder, but legally sane to stand trial. So I think he wasn't insane. I think he knew what he was doing. I think he was insane, but I think he knew what he was doing. He knew right from wrong, and he did it because it brought him pleasure. So yeah, I think he deserved what he got. So trial only lasts 2 weeks, which is nada for trial. So on February 4th, They deliver their closing arguments to the jury. They speak for 2 hours to the jury to have their closing arguments. So Michael McCain delivered the closing argument for the prosecution and said Jeffrey's sane, he was in control of his actions, and he did things to avoid detection. So clearly that proves he knew right from wrong. And he got described as calculating, and he would control his victims, and just was trying to get a prolonged period of sexual pleasure, which actually seems like a pretty accurate description of Jeffrey. Like I said, I find him the most interesting, but he was a terrible human. McCann argued by pleading guilty but insane to the charges, Jeffrey was not taking full responsibility for the crimes, which I also believe is true. On February 15th, the court got back together to hear the verdict. Jeffrey was ruled to be sane, okay, that's important, and not suffering from mental disorders, because, like, that was the main argument of the trial. It wasn't whether he did it. It was whether he was sane while he was doing it or not. So for each of the 15 counts of murder, he was tried for. Two of the 12 jurors said they had dissent with it, so formal sentencing got postponed till February 17th. On that date, Jeffrey is sentenced to life imprisonment plus 10 years upon the first two counts, with the remaining 13 counts carrying a mandatory sentence of life imprisonment plus 70 years. The death penalty could not be on the table because at the time, Wisconsin had banished capital punishment, so that's why he got life. When his father and his stepmom, Sherry, heard of his sentencing, they requested a 10-minute private meeting with him before he was to begin his sentence. And that was granted, and they exchanged hugs, and Dahmer was taken away. I don't know, as a parent, what the right way to react is. Like, do you still love your kid, even though they did such terrible things? Do you just, like, go into denial? Like, I don't get it. I don't know if I'd want to hug him. So 3 months after his conviction in Milwaukee, he gets extradited to Ohio for his first murder victim, Stephen Hicks. The court hearing lasted only 45 minutes, which is insanely short. He pled guilty and was sentenced to a 16th term of life imprisonment. So he was never getting out. Dahmer ended up at the Columbia Correctional Institute. His first year of incarceration, he was in solitary confinement because people were really concerned for his safety with the fellow inmates because of his crimes. In prison, I've probably said this a million times, but they don't like pedophiles, they don't like rapists, so you don't want to be that. Like, even these people know those are the scum of the earth, and he's a child murderer, too, on top of everything. So, like, yeah, they did not like him. So after 1 year, he was transferred to a less secure unit, and he got to work 2 hours a day, and he cleaned the toilets, which is disgusting in prison, I have to imagine, but probably better than being in your cell. Jeffrey requested that a detective that worked on his case give him a copy of the Bible, and it was granted. He became a self-proclaimed born-again Christian and devoted himself to Christianity. On his father's urging, he read creationist books from the Institute for Creation Research. In 94, Jeffrey was baptized by a minister of the Church of Christ in a prison whirlpool. Fancy. Following his baptism, Jeffrey and his minister met up on a weekly basis until November of 94. And they often discussed the prospect of death, and, you know, he questioned whether he was sinning by continuing to live after all of his actions, and if he would get forgiven and go to heaven. And so Jeffrey is directly quoted as saying, "If a person doesn't think that there is a God to be accountable to, then what's the point of trying to modify your behavior to keep it within acceptable ranges?" That's how I thought, anyway. In July of 94, a fellow inmate, Osvaldo Durthi, I hope I said that right, attempts to slash Jeffrey's throat with a razor that he put in a toothbrush, so a shank, as we all know, when he was returning from the weekly church service. It was only a superficial wound, and he wasn't really hurt in this incident besides the cut. According to Jeffrey's family, he'd been ready to die for a long time and saw it as a punishment for what he did and had accepted it. His father and stepmother maintained regular contact, and his mother, Joyce, that psycho, that little psyche, if you remember her from the beginning of the story, also maintained contact with her son. Joyce would call weekly, and they would discuss, well, he would call weekly, obviously, because she can't call prison. You know what I'm saying. And she was very concerned about Jeffrey's well-being, and Jeffrey kept saying, "It doesn't matter, Mom, I don't care if something happens to me." And then something does happen to Jeffrey, good old Jeff. On the morning of November 28th, 1994, Jeffrey left his cell to go on work detail. He had two inmates with him, Jesse Anderson and Christopher Scarver. They were left unsupervised. Remember, Jeffrey cleans the toilets, so they were left unsupervised in the showers for 20 minutes. At 8:10 a.m., Jeffrey was discovered on the floor of the bathroom in the gym suffering from a head wound. He had been bludgeoned, really bludgeoned, with a heavy 20-inch metal bar. He had been repeatedly struck against the wall as well. Jeffrey was still alive and rushed to a hospital, but 1 hour later, he was pronounced dead. Anderson had also beaten with the same in. Anderson was also beaten with the same instrument, and he died 2 days later from his wounds. Scarver, remember the other inmate that was with him, was serving a life sentence for a murder committed in 1990, and he attacked Dahmer with the metal bar when they were cleaning the locker room, and he attacked Anderson also. According to Scarver, Jeffrey didn't yell, he didn't make any noise. As we know, he had accepted that this was probably going to be his fate. And immediately after attacking both men, Scarver, who they believe was schizophrenic and it wasn't being treated at the time, was put back in his cell, and he's quoted as telling prison guards, "God told me to do it. Jesse Anderson and Jeffrey Dahmer are dead." He had not planned the attack in advance. He was pretty adamant about that, and that remained his story. But he concealed the 20-inch bar to kill both men in his clothing before the killing. So clearly he was planning on killing them at some point. So Jeffrey's mom learns of his death, and she's quoted as saying, "Now is everybody happy? Now that he is bludgeoned to death, is that good enough for everyone?" I mean, I get her being upset, but, like, people hated your son. Your son took so many other people's sons out of the world. Like, you have to accept that. The response of the victims of the families was mixed, though, and most were pleased with the death, but not all of them, but most were. And the district attorney just said, "Don't turn Scarver into a folk hero. That's not what he was. He was still a murderer, and, you know, Jeffrey's death wasn't the only one on his hands." So Scarver gets sentenced to 2 additional terms of life imprisonment for the murders of Jeffrey and Anderson. So in 1994, he confessed to having concealed the weapon to use to kill Jeffrey and Anderson in his clothes in the morning, not right before the murder, but in the morning. So remember, he was adamant he didn't plan it, but he concealed it in his clothes in the morning. So he clearly was planning it. In 2015, he publicly stated the murders of Dahmer and Anderson had resulted from a confrontation in which one of the two men had poked him, like, what? Oh my God. In the back, as the three had begun their work detail, Scarver claimed the two had laughed at him, and when he turned around, he began to beat them. Scarver now alleges that immediately before murdering Jeffrey, Jeffrey had cornered him and, he cornered Jeffrey and presented a newspaper article that went through all Jeffrey's crimes. And he says he was so revolted by it, and Jeffrey was openly unrepentant for everything he did. And he taunted everybody with these crimes by shaping his food into the shape of severed limbs, putting ketchup for blood spatter, blah, blah, trying to gross everybody out, which honestly sounds like Jeffrey from how he's described. Scarver stated that Jeffrey was so disliked by his fellow inmates that he needed a personal escort. He needed a guard whenever to prevent people from attacking him because he was so hated. Dahmer had stated that he wished for no services to be conducted and he was cremated. In September 1995, his ashes were divided amongst his parents. So, that is the conclusion of the tale of Jeffrey Dahmer. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Like and subscribe to my page as always. And as always, peace and love. I love you guys. Rose 420 out.